You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today's Friday show is not going to be a two-hour show. It'll probably be less than an hour. I've been running late trying to get caught up in the post-production for the last show, and I didn't really finish that until around 6. So I haven't had as much time as I normally would in preparing the Friday show, because normally on Fridays, at least in the past, it's been a two-hour show, sometimes 3 hours, depending on what's in the news. I want to focus in again on national security, the security of the people of the United States against the evil in the world, and there's a lot of evil in the world. But the one place that's consistently being opposed the United States in killing our soldiers abroad, as well as our citizens, and holding them in prison, torturing them, is the Islamic Republic of Iran. No, not the Islamic State, the Islamic Republic of Iran. For those that really have little or no knowledge of what's going on, you need to get the big picture first. And I always have to briefly give you a thumbnail sketch of that. Islam has approximately 1.6 billion, not million, billion people whose faith is Islam. And it's not just in the Middle East. Actually, there are more Muslims in Southeast Asia and Indonesia, and they're all over the world. We tend to think it's just the Middle East, but that's incorrect. But one of the fundamental first things you have to understand is you have two major divisions or sects of Islam. One, the majority, the overwhelming majority, are Sunnis. Roughly 89 to 90% are. And most of the Arabs, not all, but most of the Arabs are Sunnis. And that's Egypt, the most populous country in the Middle East, but also Jordan, Saudi Arabia are the two or three, and Turkey, and Northern Africa. They're Sunnis. However, 10 to 11% are Shia. And the majority of the Shia are in Iran. And the majority, about 60% of the population of Iraq, who is Arab, are Shia. So there are two major points to make. One is the Sunnis and Shia on religious matters simply do not get along. They hate each other, and each thinks the other are apostates. And according to their faith, if you're an apostate, you can, and many are, killed. Now, there are places in periods of time where Shia and Sunni have gotten along. But historically, through centuries, there's this animus or hatred between the two major divisions of Islam. There are many others. I'm just trying to give you the big picture that we're dealing with a total of about 1.6 billion people. The population of the world is about 7 billion. So there are many, many people of the Muslim faith that are peace, law-abiding, and peaceful. But because of this friction between the two major religious sects or denominations, however you like to describe it, there is a religious civil war going on. Now, the other thing that divides the Iranians, the Shia that are the Iranians, is they're Iranians. They're Persians. Persians are not Arabs. And that's another difference. There's an ethnic dimension to this. And the important point is, because of the spread of Islam throughout the world, many practitioners of this faith, and the majority being Sunni, are not Arab, they're not Persian. They live in many countries, and most of them are law-abiding and peaceful. But where's the problem? And we're seeing it every day in the news. And that's why I'm covering this again. There's a lot of stories today that deal with this conflict, struggle for dominance in the Middle East. As of right now, I would say Iran, who has been a terrorist state for over 30 years, even though quite recently the United States took them off that list at the direction of the president, they are still a terrorist regime. When U.S. military were in Iraq, as well as we're still in Afghanistan, many of the mines that were killing and wounding and causing a lot of damage were made in a factory in Iran. So when our vehicles ran over, we're on a highway, they would be set off, and the people in those vehicles, if they were lucky, might have lived, but most of them, if they were right over the mine, died or were seriously wounded, and usually it was an ambush. So you've had literally hundreds of U.S. military men and women killed as a direct result of the so-called Islamic Republic of Iran sending into Iraq these weapons. Now, a little history. You need to understand that Iraq, in the 80s, attacked Iran when Saddam Hussein was in power, and he ran a secular regime. It was a dictatorship. It was a socialist Ba'ath party that ran the country. He was a Sunni, and the Sunnis dominated the government. But it was primarily a secular regime. And because of the religious faith of Saddam Hussein, both Shia, that are the majority and predominate in central South Iraq, were persecuted, killed, tortured, as well as the Kurds, who are Sunni but a separate ethnic group. They're Kurdish, they're not Arab. So for many years, Iran and Iraq were at war, and millions died on both sides. You need to understand that bit of history. And there's a lot of ill will between the Sunnis and the Shia in that region. And that people have memories. And many of the people that still live there want revenge or seeking revenge. Because both sides, both the Sunni and the Shia, had militias that would attack those of the other faith. Now, what's going on today? In the news is the Islamic State. The Islamic State is in Iraq and Syria. They're Sunnis. And they've been killing a lot of people that are of the Islamic faith, but not necessarily Sunnis. Most of them are Iraqis that work for the government or were police or government officials that were predominantly Shia. And what they're trying to do is ethnically cleanse those territories that they control, primarily in western and northern Iraq. And they're also trying to overthrow the Syrian regime of Assad, who is an Alawite, which is a version of Shia. Who is supporting the Assad regime in Syria? Iran is, because they share the same religion. Iran has been sending arms as well as fighters, their revolutionary guards. I'm trying to think how to pronounce it. I want to say quads, but it isn't. They have an elite force that they've sent to Syria to fight both the Islamic State, but also Al-Qaeda. And at one time, what today we call the Islamic State was Al-Qaeda in Iraq. However, they were defeated. Many of them were killed. Many were in prison. Many that were lucky fled to Syria. They were Sunnis, but they belonged to the terrorist organization Al-Qaeda. And under General Petraeus and General Raymond Ordano, during the surge, they were pushed largely out of Iraq. They were either killed, systematically killed, or imprisoned, and the few that could escape to Syria. But now they're back, partially because the United States got out of Iraq under the orders of President Obama. Now, I'm not going to go into that history, but you need to understand a little of the background. Who are the players here? And I'm just starting on this. You almost need a scorecard. But keep in mind, you're dealing with differences in religion, differences in ethnicity. You have different ethnic groups, Arabs primarily, against Persians, what we call today Iranians, and you also have Kurds and other minorities. Now, what has been going on recently? In Yemen, which is south of Saudi Arabia, a group allied with and supported by Iran has overthrown the government there. Today, in the news, a group saying they're affiliate with the Islamic State blew up several Shia mosques. So the killing continues all over the Middle East. Now what, and it's a long-term situation where much of the mischief has been done by the mullahs, religious leaders, the religious leaders in Iran. And I need to say this, the regime is not popular with the people, but they do have the guns. They are in power. It's a very dictatorial, authoritarian, or totalitarian regime, and they don't allow dissent. They're quick to arrest you, torture you, and execute you. It's a police state, and they're trying to get nuclear weapons. And they've been trying this for many years. The regime has been in existence for over 30 years. And slowly but surely, they're getting closer to closer to having nuclear weapons. So you've heard in the news that this administration is negotiating with the Islamic Republic of Iran to come up with some agreement that would slow down, if not stop, Iran ultimately having a nuclear weapon. There's only one big problem. Iran, over the years, has used negotiations as one method to just delay, delay, and delay so they have more and more time to have nuclear weapons. And that's what they're doing now. I'm of the view, as are many others, that you should not be negotiating with this regime. Now, note, I didn't say go to war with them, nor did I say we should not talk. But our goal should be the ultimate overthrow of this religious terrorist regime. They want to literally destroy Israel, kill all the Israelis, and they're no friends to the United States. They've been implicated way back when Ronald Reagan was president, where a Marine barracks in Lebanon was blown up and over 200, primarily Marines, were killed. Ultimately, it was traced back to Iran. You see, what Iran does is use proxies. Their major proxy is a group called Hezbollah. They're directly controlled by Iran. That's the group that's also supporting the Assad regime, but has in the past and is up to today attacking Israel, firing missiles in. Now, recently, they've had their hands filled trying to support the Assad regime because it's under attack by Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. Those two groups are competing and trying to overthrow the Assad regime, and they're fighting not only the Assad regime, but forces from Iran as well as Hezbollah. See, Iran produces a lot, not all, but a lot of its weapons are produced in country. They have a population, I believe, just under 80 million, and that's important to keep in mind. I think it's slightly less than the population of Egypt, where Egypt is largely Sunni and Iran is Shia. Now, why am I giving you this background? Because you need to understand this. Because the question will be in the news, and it has been just because of the terrorist attacks, but it will be in the news in the coming months. And there's going to be a push by many, not me, by many, to have the United States military re-engage in Iraq and in the Middle East. I don't think that's going to happen, but there's going to be a lot of push to do that. My conclusion is there's no real good choice, with maybe one or two exceptions, as to what side we should be on. Definitely not the Islamic Republic of Iran. Definitely not the Islamic State, definitely not the Syrian regime of Assad. Those groups and their allies are engaged in a religious civil war where the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda is trying to overthrow the regime, the Shia regime in Iraq, and the Assad regime, which is Shia in Syria. But throughout the Middle East, the Iranian regime, the mullahs, the religious leaders, are shipping weapons, fighters that provide training to various groups throughout the Middle East and Africa. And I would even go further, in South America as well. So the Iranian regime is not one I would want any president to negotiate with. This president has a problem. His foreign policy has been, with maybe one exception, a total and complete disaster. He doesn't have a legacy in the foreign policy area. Even though early, very early in his administration, the Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to him. He hadn't done anything for it, and I've since learned that the chairman of that committee has been replaced. I think Obama was probably surprised, as most people, that he got the award. It usually is given to political leaders where they have achieved something in the foreign policy area. And at that time, President Obama had not. And if anything, if you look at what has happened throughout Northern Africa and the Middle East, extending into Iran, the entire area is in chaos, whether it's Libya, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, where each side is engaging in terrorist activities where they use suicide bombers to blow up those of the other faith, usually either in some public place. I think today they killed over 200 people. There were several attacks. Now, what's in the news is the general that led the surge, General Petraeus, was asked, who's the greatest threat in the Middle East? Now, some of you would say the Islamic State. I would not say that. I agree with General Petraeus. By far, it's Iran, because they've been supporting terrorism throughout the world. And what's even more dangerous, they're coming increasingly close to having enough uranium to have one or more nuclear weapons that they can put on missiles that can hit Europe. This is a direct threat to our ally, and we have several in the Middle East, but the primary ally is Israel. And yes, Israel has nuclear weapons. If you do research on it, you'll see some reports that estimate they have 80. I've seen other reports they have somewhere between 300 and 500 nuclear weapons that they can fire either by missiles or off of jet fighter aircraft, bombers, as well as through artillery pieces and off of submarines. But it's hard to get a real handle on the exact number the Israelis have. An important point here. Have they used the nuclear weapons? No. Are they engaged in terrorism? No. Are they democracy? Yes, that just had an election. But it's no secret that this president, President Obama, has an animus against Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister that just got reelected in a landslide. They really don't care for each other. But the United States and Israel are major allies. And that will continue despite what President Obama is doing. And there's never really going to be two states, namely Israel and Palestine, in the Middle East, for the simple reason the Palestinians, those that lead the Palestinians, Hamas, which is another terrorist organization, but they're Sunni, they don't want the state of Israel to exist. They want to annihilate the state of Israel and its people. That is not a ground for a negotiated settlement. And the Israeli prime minister understands that. And that has been the problem all along. There have been continuous negotiations, a so-called peace process, to come together so you could have both the state of Israel and Palestine exist as separate states. The problem is the people that run and try to control that political process will never agree that the state of Israel should exist. They think the final solution to this is the destruction of Israel and the Israeli people. So there's really no basis in negotiation. And that's the group that periodically launches both short and medium range missiles into Israel, thousands of them, and that kill Israelis. Now, they're Sunnis, but they are even supposedly getting support from Iran. Very strange bedfellows there, But Iran also wants to destroy Israel. That's one of the reasons that they're going for a nuclear capability. They want to be the dominant power in the Middle East. Now, who's threatened by them? Saudi Arabia is, Egypt is, Jordan is, Libya is. So the Middle East is a very unstable area today, with many groups trying to kill each other. Now, what should the United States do? Many, not me, are calling for the United States to destroy the Islamic State through air power. First of all, that can't be done. Yes, more missions or sorties could be launched against the Islamic State, but if you truly want to destroy them, you're going to need troops on the ground, and the president has ruled that out. Let's just say for a moment that the president changed his mind, and we did have an all-out air attack against the Islamic State with limited special forces and Central Intelligence Agency operatives supporting the Iraqi government. And let's say the Islamic State ultimately was destroyed. What's the problem there? Who really would win? Iran would win, because it's Iran that are Shia that are providing much of the training and military assistance and equipment to the Iraqi government, because they want to see the Sunnis and the Islamic State, its supporters are Sunni. So if the Islamic State was destroyed, and I want them destroyed, but you would have a vacuum that would quickly be replaced by the Iranians and their proxies, the Iraqis, in the area. What if we supported Iran, which is where we're tending, sort of leaning right now? Let me back up. What if we supported the Islamic State, which we'll never do, but they attacked Iran? And let's say they won. I don't think they could ever win against Iran because of the sheer numbers, but they would still have to contend with the majority that are Shia in the South. Now, one thing that needs to quickly be said, why is all this fighting going on? And what are they fighting over? Besides religion and control, what are they really fighting over? What's in it for them? Ladies and gentlemen, it's not hard to understand. It's oil and natural gas. Because both Iraq and Iran, in the past and to a limited extent today, are the leading producers of oil and natural gas. I think Iran has roughly 10% of the proven oil reserves, and it's a similar number for Iraq. Now, the problem is they need a lot of investment to upgrade their infrastructure to at both extract and produce, for example, gasoline. You need refineries. Both countries are rich in oil and natural gas. Much of that natural gas and oil is shipped not only to Europe, but to China, India, and other nations in the Far East. So those two nations, the reason the fights are bitter and to the end, is ultimately over the control of that oil and natural gas and the shipment of that product to various customers throughout the world. That is really the only reason and the prime reason that the United States has a national interest in what happens in the Middle East. It is to ideally, you would like a stable situation where both countries would prosper through their export of those two energy products. That would be the ideal situation. But it's not going to happen, and you're not going to get people to risk considerable sums of money, both in exploration, development, and production, until you have political stability in both of those countries and the surrounding area, which you don't have, especially when both sides are engaged in terrorist activities that result in bombs blowing up and killing innocent people. Terrorism is a tactic, and groups engage in it where they don't have better alternatives. And that's what they're doing. And they're doing it not only in Iraq, in Syria, but also in Yemen and throughout the Middle East. So I don't see any good side for the United States to pick. Now, let me say, the Kurds could get our support because they've been persecuted by the Sunnis when Saddam Hussein was in power, even though they are Sunnis, because there's an ethnic difference. They are in the northern mountainous regions of Iraq, but they also are in Iran and Turkey and Syria. They're a group that simply should have their own country but doesn't. The only other country that we could support is Israel. Yet we're negotiating a treaty that if it ultimately results in Iran getting a nuclear weapon, is not in the interest of the government of Israel. And that's what this whole situation, this whole history of what has happened in the past and what the Iranian regime of the mullahs are all about, is using terrorism to defeat their enemies. And their two primary enemies, the great Satan is the United States, and the little Satan is Israel. Nothing has fundamentally changed. And although the Iranian people, and especially those who would like to see the regime toppled, have been persecuted, this is not a regime that has widespread support amongst the people of Iran that are very young. No one is really going to cry very much if that regime falls. Now, I'm saying that because that should be our objective. It shouldn't be to normalize relations. It shouldn't be to take them off. Iran off the terrorist list. It certainly shouldn't be negotiating with them regarding nuclear weapons because they never have lived up to their agreements. What we should be doing through covert operations is supporting those in Iran that are trying to change that regime, to overthrow the regime. They largely don't have weapons. They certainly don't have money. And that's what it takes when you're fighting a regime that has, they have an army of over 500,000, as well as a police force and Revolutionary Guards, and they have the guns. Now, what does it take for that to happen? One way is to increase the sanctions, the economic sanctions. They work. Another way, and Saudi Arabia is doing this, is to increase the production of petroleum, which has resulted in falling crude oil prices. And that hurts Iran. It hurts them economically, which puts more and more pressure on the regime. This regime is ripe for being overthrown. Does that involve our military intervening in Iran? No, it doesn't. Does it involve the Central Intelligence Agency through special operators or special forces providing intelligence, support, training, weapons to various dissident groups throughout Iran? Yes, it does. But I'm not advocating that we send our military in there, nor am I advocating that we send our military back into Iraq and eventually Syria. Hands off. Because both of these groups, the Islamic State and the Islamic Republic, are engaged in a civil war throughout the Middle East, primarily today in Iraq, Syria, and Yemen. They're going to kill each other. They've been doing this for decades, really centuries. I, for one, do not want to see any more American soldiers being killed in either of these countries, mainly because we don't need their oil. If the United States wanted to, it could be totally independent from the Middle East. Now, that would take a president that would open up federal lands and let federal lands be developed by the oil companies. Because one of the reasons why we have falling prices today is we've had private enterprise, mainly your smaller independent companies, using more advanced technologies such as directional drilling, also called horizontal drilling and fracturing, to both discover and produce oil as well as natural gas. All of that has been done on private land. Very little, I won't say none, but very little has come from federal land. But if we opened up the federal lands and roughly about a third, it varies from state to state, but many of your western states, the majority land is owned by the federal government. If it were opened up for exploration and development combined with the private land, the United States would, in a matter of a few years, be energy independent, which means although the oil from the Middle East is important to many countries, we would not need to rely on it. We still have oil that we can get from Canada, but that requires the approval of the Keystone Pipeline, the extension of it. You see, energy could be one of the economic drivers of economic growth if President Obama and the Democratic Party would get out of the way. Instead, they're resisting it, putting roadblocks, because they think the answer is windmills or wind turbines and solar power. It isn't. We have massive energy resources in coal, natural gas, oil, and yes, nuclear. And a small percentage, 5-6%, is water power. You see, most of our energy needs are either needed for the production of electricity, in other words, to provide a fuel to produce electricity, or they're used primarily for powering vehicles, gasoline, diesel, and to a lesser extent, heating oil. Those are our important energy needs. And to the extent that the prices of that energy, as a result of discoveries of huge supplies of additional oil and natural gas, would mean the cost of energy in the United States would be going down, not only for electricity, but also for gasoline to power vehicles. Which, what does that mean? That means it's less expensive to produce goods and services in the United States. In other words, the United States would be very competitive in the manufacture and the distribution of all goods and services. It's not why the driving force is increased energy production. As you have cheaper and cheaper electricity, as well as cheaper and cheaper gasoline and diesel and heating oil, the goods you and I buy at various retail stores would go down. So I think the United States should not be negotiating a treaty with the leading terrorist nation in the world. We have no business negotiating with them. Our focus of our energy should be overthrowing the mullahs. Don't play footsie with them, because the worst thing that could happen is Iran have the nuclear bomb. Because what will be the immediate consequence if that becomes clear that they do? And they're very close to it. What do you think the other countries in the Middle East are going to do? And that's Saudi Arabia and Egypt primarily, as well as Turkey. They're going to go nuclear, whether they have to buy a weapon from Pakistan, who is Sunni, or have their own nuclear program. You see, what takes time for a nuclear program is the enrichment of uranium, where it's enriched to over 90%. If you want to just have the uranium fuel to power a electrical power plant, it's in the range of 3-5%. If you want uranium to do research, it's in the 20% range. And that takes centrifuges to enrich it. But if you want a nuclear weapon, the uranium has to be enriched to a level above 90%. And that takes thousands of centrifuges. The only acceptable agreement with Iran is the complete destruction of all their centrifuges and an inspection, an ongoing inspection and surveillance of what's going on, and a complete disclosure by Iran of where all their facilities are. The problem is the Iranian government is not going to do that, because their prime objective is to get nuclear weapons and become a dominant regional power, and with the ability to strike Israel. Now, in the past, the Israeli government has used its air power to destroy, in the early stages, both in Syria and Iraq, when they were trying to enrich the uranium to eventually get a nuclear weapon. They took the nuclear reactors out, or the centrifuges out. And at some point, you're going to wake up some morning and learn on the radio that Israeli defense forces have destroyed some, not all, some of the capability of the Islamic Republic of Iran in terms of their nuclear facilities. And there are various facilities. One, you need to mine the uranium. You need to process that. Then you need to enrich it. And there's two ways to go. You can either go the nuclear reactor route and get the plutonium as the fuel, or you could go the enriched uranium route, use centrifuges to, over time, with cascades of thousands of these, to further enrich the uranium to where it's over 90%. All of that needs to stop because Iran doesn't need nuclear power. It has more natural gas to run electrical plants than most countries. And if all they wanted was nuclear power to generate electricity, I don't think that's a problem because you don't need to enrich the uranium above 5%. So what's my conclusion? First of all, General Petraeus was asked, and he said the leading threat in the Middle East is Iran. It's not the Islamic State. It's not that the Islamic State shouldn't be destroyed, but it is Iran, because what if just one of those nuclear weapons was developed and Iran used one of its proxies to get a nuclear weapon into Israel or a city in Europe or into the United States? It was a terrorist group, and one of those bombs went off. I think public opinion would dramatically shift. Now, there's a big danger for them to do that. I think, you know, the United States, Israel, and other nations would retaliate. I don't want to see millions of Iranians die in a nuclear holocaust. And that's what would happen. You see, I'm on the side of the Iranian people, but they need our support, as well as support of other nations, to overthrow the Iranian regime, the mullahs. And that's what needs to happen. Those are the mischief makers, the mullahs, the guys with these white turbans, or black turbans, excuse me. You've seen them. So the time for action is fast approaching. I don't want the United States and its military forces to re-enter Iraq. And I don't think the president does either. We shouldn't be taking sides. And I'm getting the distinct impression that that's exactly what we're doing, that the Obama administration is siding with Iran. That is a very dangerous route, because they have not in the past lived up to their agreements. They have been killing Americans for over 30 years. And as far as I'm concerned, we shouldn't be negotiating with them. We should be taking whatever means, excluding military for now, to assist the Iranian people in overthrowing the mullahs, the existing Iranian government. That can happen, but it's not going to be likely if the Iranian regime stays in power because the United States and Europe lift the sanctions. The sanctions are hurting, yes, the Iranian people, because ultimately it is the Iranian people that must change their government, must oust those in power. And that is going to be a civil war. But that is necessary because, as far as I'm concerned, that's the only thing that's going to lead to maybe a little more stability and the stopping of the nuclear efforts by Iran to get a nuclear weapon. There's no guarantee, even if we had a regime change, that they would stop the nuclear program. You see, the carrot here is the total and complete lifting of sanctions by the United States and Western Europe, so that money, capital, investments, goods and services can flow again into Iran, and the standard of living of the Iranians would go up. The worst thing would be to prematurely lift those economic sanctions. Now, I don't think sanctions alone should be the alternative. It must be a combination of sanctions as well as support for those groups that are trying to overthrow the regime. You see, I don't think the United States should intervene militarily in the Middle East, because when you're doing that, you are taking sides. And whoever you side with, the other side is against you. It's not our religious fight. And this is largely a religious, namely the Sunnis versus the Shia, as well as ethnic, the Arabs versus the Persians. That's what all this is about. We're talking a civil war, a religious sectarian civil war. And those types of wars are violent, they're brutal, and many tens, hundreds of thousands of innocent people get killed. And I don't want to see the United States military in the middle of it. Even though there's an urge, and I've had it, and other people, Americans have had it, to go in there and bomb them, take them out. What the terrorists are trying to do, deliberately trying to do through their propaganda, and through their acts of terrorism in the Middle East is to provoke the United States and have the United States military come back into the region. That's what they're trying to do, for example, with all their YouTube videos, where they're showing the cutting off of heads, the torture, the executions that they've engaged in, largely the Islamic State. But both sides are doing it. It's using propaganda to stir up resentment. They know they're doing that. I actually think it's not in their interest to do that, but that's what they're doing. And why? They want the United States to re-engage. So they have an opportunity to again kill American soldiers. And as much as we could increase the number of missions of the various military air forces that we have, both Army, Navy, Marines, as well as our allies in the area, ultimately you need troops on the ground, by block, by street, by building, by floor, by apartment, to root out whether it's the Islamic State supporters, fighters, or the Shia. Both sides ultimately want a caliphate where Sharia law is the law of the land. That is the objective of both sides. What we have here is dueling caliphates where the caliph is the ruler, and they're successful to the extent that they control territory. It is all about political power. It's all about two religions fighting, believers in each religion fighting each other, and it's also about oil and natural gas. And I keep pointing to that and mentioning that because that's why we're there and have been there for decades. That's why the British were there for much longer, since the early 1900s and during World War I. Follow the money, and if you follow the money, it's about oil. Oil. Because, yes, the Saudis, which are Saudi Arabia's actually borders Iraq and is largely south of Iraq, but they're also across from Iran. And on their southern borders, you have Yemen. Saudi Arabia is threatened by both the Islamic State and the Islamic Republic. And they're supposedly one of our allies, and our allies are getting very nervous, whether it's Saudi Arabia, Israel, Egypt, Jordan. They're wondering, whose side are you on? Can we rely on you? And my answer is, no, you can't. You're going to have to defend yourselves. But I don't want a proliferation of nuclear weapons into the Middle East. That's why it's fundamental and paramount that the United States stop that, not encourage it or enable it by permitting those centrifuges from continuing on, because that's just giving more and more time for the Islamic Republic to get more nuclear fuel. And why they're supposed to disclose their secret production sites, they have in the past have not. Only through sheer accidents have eventually the United States and other governments become aware of it. I think they have several secret sites that neither Israel, the United States, or Europe knows of. And no one knows how many centrifuges they have doing it. That's why we don't know how close Iran is to having a nuclear weapon. So if the regime in Iran cannot be overthrown quickly at some point, and I'm afraid to say I think we're fast approaching it, both Israel and the United States will have to use its military forces to take out that nuclear capability. And there are many facilities that would have to be taken out. And it really does require the air forces of both Israel and the United States to do that. You need refueling capability. You need munitions that can destroy facilities deep underground. And you got to keep in mind that one of the first things you need to do is take out their command and control and radars, their surface-to-air missiles that can take out our aircraft. So we can't sit still. Even though I'm making it clear to stay out of the region, pressure must be brought to bear through sanctions, through lower energy prices, petroleum, as well as providing dissidents in Iran arms intelligence, training, support, so they can be in a position to overthrow the regime. There's a range of options that are on the table, and they all need to be used to various degrees. Talk will not settle this. That's playing into the hands of the Iranians. And re-engaging in Iraq is not the answer either. The Islamic State needs to be destroyed, but it needs to be destroyed not by Shia Muslims, but by Sunni Muslims, namely troops from Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Turkey. Will that happen? Who knows? It's going to require leadership on their part and some prodding from us. Saudi Arabia, because of its situation having the largest reserves, can provide the money, but Egypt, Turkey, Jordan has to provide the troops. And keep in mind why this is going on. The Shia in Iraq, supported by Iran, are not going to look very favorably upon a Sunni army, even if it is destroying the Islamic State. I'm looking at the time. I'm going to wrap it up. The show will probably be less than an hour. Matter of fact, I know it will be less than an hour, because once I edit it down, it'll probably be about 40 minutes or so. The turmoil, the violence, is continuing in the Middle East. And if you don't really follow this, and you should be, especially if you have children that are in the military, you need to know what's going on. Because if Iran gets a nuclear weapon, it's not going to be one, it's going to be many. And I don't want the next terrorist attack in the United States being a nuclear weapon going off in one of our major cities. That's one of the things that they could do. There are many others. What I'd like you to do, I should have mentioned this early, the way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show, at your convenience, is to go to my companion blog for the show, which is pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And right below my photograph, that also gives you the URL, is the most links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows. And this show will be posted by 5 o'clock tomorrow. I won't have time to this evening to finish the editing. And when I say editing, normally what I do is delete some of the dead air to tighten it up, because I do have pauses that I can eliminate. But a reason why I give you this is we have new listeners, but more importantly, I try to give you a lot of additional information, references, information to think about. And that could be YouTube videos, it could be articles, could be charts, photographs, pertaining to the stories in the news that I'm commenting on, as well as to give you some background information. And I could put a lot more, because I was in a rush, and I probably will add several articles tomorrow, and once I finish the editing, and we'll post it by 5, both on my Pronk Pop site, and I also have one for KDUX Web Radio. That's will be the second post, but it's an identical post. And at the very bottom of that page, you'll have links to all my shows, with the exception of the few earlier shows. So if you do have the time and want to get up to speed, I suggest you view some of the embedded YouTube videos that I have there. And I will have by tomorrow some articles for you to read. For the simple reason, there are a number of developing stories pertaining to this. And that's why I had to be somewhat selective. Can't give you everything. But look at that. And there's an excellent book. It's more background information, written by Thomas Reed. It's a political history of nuclear weapons. It's called Nuclear Express. It's an ideal book to get the big picture of the spread of nuclear weapons and the developments. It's from 1938 through 2008. It's a little bit dated, but it gives you a sense of what's going on. It gives you the big picture. It gives you the 35,000 feet big picture. I've read the book. I recommend the book. It's probably, if you're going to start anywhere on the whole subject of nuclear weapons and nuclear proliferation and how to stop it, that would be probably the first book I'd read. There are articles too. But I have a YouTube video where Thomas Reed is speaking to an audience. It's about an hour video where he gives the history as to, you know, who has nuclear weapons and how they have spread. Fortunately, they have not spread through the entire world. And that's the point I'm trying to make. We have to stop nuclear proliferation, especially when it involves nations that have a history of terrorism throughout their region, and that is Iran. They and North Korea are the two nations that shouldn't have nuclear weapons, and because of a previous Democratic administration negotiating with North Korea, North Korea has nuclear weapons today. Negotiations is not the route to stopping this. It's not. It's been a failure, and the same people that were involved in negotiating that deal are negotiating with Iran. Does that give you comfort? It doesn't comfort me at all. And I think this president is out of his mind, thinking he can talk this regime in really stopping its efforts to get a nuclear bomb. They'll sign anything. They'll lie, cheat, and steal. And at the end of the day, they'll have the nuclear weapons. It's time for this president to wake up. It's not like he doesn't know this. Iran is a clear and present danger to the entire world, not just the United States. Because if they get multiple nuclear weapons, and it can happen fairly quickly, and put them on missiles, those missiles today can reach Europe, many of the nations in Europe. They can also reach the United States by terrorists coming in on a freighter, for example. And there's an excellent, this book had an excellent scenario of how that would happen in the United States. What I have not had time to explore is the release of a nuclear weapon at a fairly high altitude over the United States, where you would have a electronic magnetic pulse that would take out our computer's ability to generate electricity. In addition to the detonation of a nuclear weapon in one of our cities, that frankly is even a greater threat. And the book provides you with a description of how that would be done. It should be read. It reads like fiction. It's presented as a scenario so you understand what could happen. And the Israeli Prime Minister, in his speech to Congress earlier this month, gave us that wake-up call. That is an historic, important speech. It is a wake-up call to the American people, but it's really a wake-up call to the entire world. And our narcissistic president, the petulant president, could not stand that. He thought he was sabotaging his efforts for a deal so he could have a legacy. Mr. President, he was giving you a warning, as have many other people, and you refuse to address that. You think you can do better. Well, the same people in a previous Democratic administration thought they could do the same thing with North Korea. It didn't work out, did it? It didn't. And now they're doing with Iran? Please, you're supposed to learn from experience, and ideally from the experience of others, not repeat their mistakes. You see, eventually this president is going to have to tell the American people exactly, with a lot of specifics, what the deal is. And once that happens, it's going to hit the fan. He'll put it off as long as he can. He'll lie about it. And that's part of the problem. You're dealing with a tyrant, a president that's out of control, that's breaking laws, is forcing a constitutional crisis that, unfortunately, the Republican Party is not addressing. And the only good news here, there are a lot of Republicans as well as Democrats that will vote against any deal that threatens the American people, the people of Israel, and the people in the world, including our allies in the Middle East. So he can delay and delay and lie, but ultimately the truth will win out. And negotiations of this type ultimately have to be put on paper and submitted to the Senate. And if this is, he won't do that. But if it is, it won't be approved. And under the Constitution, the Senate has that responsibility. What this president apparently is going to try to do is have the UN approve the agreement. In other words, not show it to our own representatives, but to present it to the United Nations for approval. And remember, there are at least 57 nations in the United Nations that are Islamic. But keep in mind, the majority of those nations are Sunni. And they are definitely threatened by the Islamic Republic of Iran that are Shiites. So with that, I'll wrap up the show. It'll be slightly less than an hour. You should see it posted by 5 o'clock. I wish you a pleasant weekend. I'm going to be trying to catch up on my sleep because I have been having some issues or problems, challenges getting enough hours sleep. So this weekend, that's one of my top priorities because I haven't added it up, but for the last 5 or 6 days, I'm probably behind a good 20 or 30 hours. So I'm probably going to crash either Saturday or Sunday. So have a great weekend. I hope you've enjoyed listening to the show. I know this has been a rather serious show, but we're talking about the security of really everybody on the planet. We don't want nuclear proliferation in the Middle East. We don't want a potential terrorist to get a hold of a nuclear weapon. This concerns everybody. With that, let me play my favorite song, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College.